talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Welcome to the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And today is August 31st, Monday morning. Lots to talk about, a lot of new movies to review. We're going to sort of recap the summer. One of our favorite directors died. We're going to talk about a silent film. So let's get down to business. We always like to start out with the top 10 over the weekend. Michelle, what happened over the weekend?
Straight Out of Compton. Once again, number one at the box office with 13.
That's what I predicted.
You did. Yeah. I mean, with the soft opening of all these other films, it's hanging in there.
Now, the wild card is following it, though.
Exactly. Yeah. And number two from Sony was War Room with a predominantly black cast. Excuse and me. A Christian-based film came in at $11 million, so one and two, that's great. Number three is Mission Impossible Rogue Nation from Paramount, $8.3 million. Number four was No Escape, $8.3 million. Number five, Sinister 2 at $4.7 million. Coming in at the number six spot was Man from U.N.C.L.E. From Warner Brothers at $4.4 million. Mm. Hitman in the number seven spot, $3.9 million. Yeah. The Gift, $3.1 million at number eight. Jurassic World, $3.1 million, and that's getting a IMAX re-release here. That came in at $3.1 million for the number nine spot. Ant-Man, Jim and
I'm still stunned by that. Saturday Night Live was right. Marvel can't fail. They take the thing is when Marvel Studios started, they said, well, Iron Man is a B-list character, and Ant-Man is a C-list character.
Yeah,
but Fantastic Four has fallen out of the top.
Oh yeah, So
and that happened opened a month after Ant-Man.
Number 10 was Ant-Man, and number 11 was Minions from Universal at $2.9 million, pushing that over into the $1 billion mark worldwide for a cumulative release.
Billion with a B. This astounds me too. You know,
I'm telling you, people overseas love it. And number 12 was American Ultra, not appearing in the 12.
Oh, not even in the 12?
Not even the 12. No love, no friends for Zac Efron. We Are Your Friends. Yeah. Had a historic opening weekend bomb of $1.8 million.
And we're going to review that here in a couple of minutes. Let's talk about War Room, though, for a second. This is sort of a interesting phenomenon. There's this Christian film with an all-black cast.
Yes.
They did not show it to us.
No. And it was all over the news this weekend that it was doing really well.
Yeah, I think, well, I recall seeing the stand-ups, the displays in the theaters, but I never had seen any commercials until recently. Yeah. And sometimes, well, it's like, what was it last year? Was it Heaven is a Real Place? Was that the name of
Heaven
the
film? Yeah, Heaven is for Real,
Heaven is for Real. They showed it to us.
They did. And but that had Greg Kinnear. I think they had sunk a little more money into that one, perhaps. But that was the only Christian film that they've shown to us in advance. But there's been, like, Facing the Giants and God is Not Dead. And all these movies have done real well, so there's a built-in audience for them. I guess people that think that the movies have too much sex and violence or something. I don't know. But I saw the trailer for War Room, and boy, I got nothing out of it. It's very bland. It looks just sort of this domestic drama. It probably couldn't have cost more than $11 million to make, so it probably made all its money back.
You think it's kind of like those stage shows that they put on the Fox for a day?
The family ones, they say, you know, our prayer room, it's going to be our war room. That's the whole, and I'm telling you, the Christian-based films, some of them they're really turning out for. And I mean, look at $11 million. They didn't expect it even to make four.
Wow. Yeah, it certainly, you know, crushed the big, you know, Hollywood type releases.
No Escape. It made substantially more than No Escape.
Yep.
And of course,
We Are Your Friends.
Quintupled We Are Your Friends.
And
it made 10 times as much as We Are Your Friends.
Oh, my God.
And so number one and number two had predominantly black cast, too. It's of note. Just heard that this morning on a few of the talk shows, the morning shows.
Yeah.
And
do you know that how much that Compton's made by now? Is it cross the $300 million mark, I guess? Or?
I doubt it. I doubt it's made that much.
Worldwide, it has made $140 million.
Yeah,
for Compton.
That doesn't seem like that kind of movie that's going to play well outside the United States.
I mean, it's only done $6.8 million international.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, how many markets is it?
But speaking of Terminator Genesis, after 8 days in China alone, $82.8 million, which means, guess what? That's no longer considered a flop, which means I'm thinking we're going to see another Terminator.
Oh, I'm sure we will.
That's great.
And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. We're going to sort of recap the summer and which were the hot hits of the summer, which movies were sort of the flops of the summer. I guess we'd have to say Terminator was a flop. In the U.S., it made just over $100 million, but internationally, it cleaned up. So that's kind of two separate charts. But let's start out with some reviews here. Got a review, No Escape. No Escape starred Owen Wilson and Lake Bell and
Pierce Brosnan
was in there.
Get your head down! Ah! Look out!
You're alive, Jack.
Ah! Hey!
Just get your family the hell out of here.
Yeah, Jim, you gave it 4 out of 5, which is probably what I would have given it as well. I liked it. Tell us what you liked about it.
Well, I think it keeps that suspenseful tone. It's as a thriller, it works. It promises on or it delivers on what it promises. It's unrelenting. You feel like you've been put through the mill, as they say at the end of it. It's really really brutal, and I'm thinking maybe what they showed in the trailers kind of turned people off, that they thought that they wouldn't be able to handle it. It would be too unrelenting.
You mean throwing the daughter off the roof under the other roof?
Yes. And I was looking over the reviews or some of the comments on Rotten Tomatoes, and I think its low rating is probably, I kind of touch on it in my review, in that some of the they try to give a reason for these people going out on the streets and pulling out Americans and executing them and all that, but in some of the sequences they just are so sadistic and cruel. It does touch on a little, I guess would be xenophobia, a little fear of these strangers, and it seemed like this was making a lot of the critics really see red. Mm-hmm. Although Pierce Brosnan's character has that not a monologue, he has a dialogue with the Owen Wilson's character saying, the chickens have come home to roost, that this is kind of, we've sowed what we reaped and all that sort of thing. Yeah. And they're sort of trying to give a reason, but aside from his way too friendly taxi driver, everyone is, even before all of that stuff hits the fan, they're just kind of looking at the family, Owen Wilson's family, just very, very ominously, I don't know. And I think another reviewer picked up on something I did. It's kind of a zombie film with them wanting to eat you. They just want to kill them. But like I say, in a couple of sequences, they're really into torturing this poor guy.
And then what they put these daughters, he has these two daughters. I guess they're probably maybe 7 and 9. And what they put those poor kids through, good grief. They have to watch their mother get tied down and her blouse ripped off and almost raped. And then there's a scene where they give the gun to one of the little girls and force her to put it up to her father's head.
Those are the scenes I'm talking about. Just really cruel. Yeah. It's worse enough that they're going to kill this guy, but they're going to just put him through the ringer beforehand.
But it does generate a whole lot of tension. I mean, it's a real white knuckle kind of chase film. In the whole point of the movie, he's 10 steps. He goes, "We got to stay 10 steps ahead of these guys," and he sure enough is. It seems like they're right on his tail from beginning to end. And then you got Pierce Brosnan, who jumps in. He seems to be out of a kind of a different movie. He shows up at the last second to save him a couple of times, and he has some sort of macho speeches and does some things. Where Owen Wilson, his character seems sort of realistic. He sort of acts like, I might act in that situation. He doesn't become some sort of superhero vigilante guy.
Yeah, there was a nice sequence where one of their escape routes has been shut off to them, and it looks like Owen Wilson's character's brain just completely shuts down, and it's a simulation of, I guess, a panic attack. Mm-hmm. And luckily, his wife, played by Lake Bell, is able to pull him out of it. But I was like, that's realistic. He's not going into super soldier mode. He's just at a loss for what to do. But I have a feeling some of that, the brutality was just kind of turning people off of it. And they saw that in the trailer. And I would have thought with its opening on Wednesday that it would have
done better.
Yeah, it would have been in the top three at least or something. But,
people like it. I mean, I don't know what it did on the Rotten Tomatoes with critics, but audiences really seemed to like it. A friend of ours that we saw it with said her jaw was sore the next day because of all the tension. She was clenching her jaw throughout the film. I mean, That tells you something.
Well, I just got to get them in the theater, though. Yeah. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one thing. It might get discovered once it's on home video.
That's what I was going to say. People will discover it like 4 or 5 years from now, like on HBO, mm-hmm. during the middle of the night, you know, and say, where was this film?
Certainly not going to help the tourism bureaus to the Far Eastern countries. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a friend of mine that loves to go to Thailand, which was where it was shot, he's really wanting to see it. And I was like, well, it doesn't come off that well, although they never name the country.
But it borders Vietnam, obviously.
So that kind of narrows it down to two or three, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's a heck of a trip there. And,
A really well-made film. I mean, it's well-directed, it's well-paced, it's well-acted. It's a good movie.
Probably a bit too much slow motion for me, but, you know, it's okay. And a little, you know, like I say, Pierce kind of serves as the cavalry, you know, charging in at the last second one too many times.
But I like that, yeah.
But yeah, it's a heck of a thriller, I tell you.
Yeah. So that's No Escape. Jim and I both recommend No Escape. Neither one of us are going to recommend We Are Your Friends, which how much did it make? Like $1 million?
Yeah, just 1.8 million.
Any successful artist, they have this moment where they stop being an admirer and they find their signature. Sounds have soul. Build them from scratch. Find new ones. Get your head out of that laptop and start listening to what the real world is trying to tell you.
All the box office reports were like, that's like historic flop.
Yeah, for a studio film.
for a studio film, no less.
Yeah. Well, that's at least like 1,200 screens or something across the U.S.
It's showing wide, but it's not a very good movie.
Oh, it's just, well, I was turned off by the trailers. I had to suffer through them a couple of times at a couple of screenings. I'm like, what is this?
This is not good for Warner Brothers, boy. No. This is real. I mean,
following up from the dismal returns from Man from U.N.C.L.E. Certainly not helping Warner Brothers.
Right.
This summer.
Batman versus Superman can't get here soon enough.
Yeah.
We Are Your Friends is about Zac Efron, and he plays a 23-year-old laptop DJ aspiring, which. To me, I just don't. I said in my review, I don't understand. Do 20,000, 30,000 people really crowd around a stage to watch some guy banging on his laptop? Is that really a thing? Maybe it is. I don't know. But he meets up with this legendary laptop DJ played by Wes Bentley. Well played by Wes Bentley.
Yeah, good to see him back out there again. Yeah.
But maybe he just seemed good because everybody else was so lousy. Or his character really had the most energy and the most personality. But they get together, and he sort of takes them under his wing, and Zach sort of falls in love with his girlfriend, who's played by Emily Ratajkowski. Did I say her name right?
Yeah, Ratajkowski.
And she's kind of good, too, or at least she looks good, but she doesn't have much to do. She's sort of a pawn between these two men, and, you know, what else happens? They get ready for the big summer jam where he can stand in front of a crowd and play his laptop. I just didn't get it.
Well, I was going to say, you haven't mentioned his posse.
Oh, yeah.
Cole is the name of the character that Zac Efron plays. His posse. He's got like three buddies, and they're just, you don't care about them. One of them is a complete jerk, and a violent jerk that just flies off the handle at anything. And they're trying to go for like sort of a Saturday Night Fever vibe, you know, with Travolta and his buddies in that.
A lot of bonding, a lot of sort of vulgar masculine slapping on the back and hugging each other.
And I think you mentioned in your review the just completely unnecessary subplot with John Barenthal, I believe it was his name there, who plays sort of a low-rent version of Leonardo DiCaprio's character from Wolf of Wall Street, where he's sort of giving out home loans and then taking people's houses, and the guys work for him during the day, and they're getting seduced by that, and it's just ridiculous.
I think that whole subplot served to show that, you know, Zac Efron's character has something of a conscience, but it didn't make any sense, because at the end, one of the victims of his home loan scams, he sort of literally rewards her. But does that take care of the other hundreds of victims of the they've been doing during the day?
She only matters because that's the only one we see. We hear a couple of them over the phone, you know. But the thing is, all during this, he's putting wads of cash into this shoebox. I keep on waiting for him to come home, and he puts it under his bed, and waiting for him not to find it under his bed, and maybe one of his low-life buddies has taken it, or maybe him coming home from one of these gigs and this place is on fire and it's burned up in there. But no, I keep waiting for the payoff from that, and that happens about midway through the credits is the big payoff, and it's not worth it.
No.
if you've even made it that far.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's you know, him, you know, working on his laptop and people, mm-hmm. you know, dancing in clubs, getting drunk, yeah. and lots smoking lots of weed.
Yeah.
And there's one kind of fun sequence, I think you mentioned, where he's in an art gallery and the paintings are coming to life. And that's kind
of near the beginning.
But at least Emily Ratajkowski, you know, looks a little livelier than she did in Entourage. Maybe she was reading the script in between takes of Entourage, and that was kind of, you know, lulling her to sleep or something. But
another Warner Brothers movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, they've had a rough summer, I tell you. Mm. But yeah.
And it looks so promising with Mad Max.
that's great. But their slate is just now not doing anything. And
so We Are Your Friends, absolutely terrible. We do not recommend We Are Your Friends. Jim, you've seen Walk in the Woods. That opens Wednesday, right?
Yeah, that's another one of those sneaky Wednesday things.
I have not seen it. Michelle has not seen it. I'm actually seeing it tonight.
You want to drive the Appalachian Trail?
I came out of here to be with you. One last adventure before it's too late.
You can do whatever you want, but this is my adventure.
Fine!
That's the spirit.
Do you recommend Walk in the Woods, and if so, why?
I would recommend that with some qualms that some of it might be a little dull for some of the younger audiences there. This is one of those films that you could take your auntie to or your mom to, and you won't be completely bored, and there's not a whole lot in there to offend them, even though it does have an R rating, but that's mostly because of that darn Nick Nolte's salty language there. You know, wash his mouth out with soap.
He's good at that.
After you give him a lozenge, that was one thing that was driving me crazy. He's so gravelly now.
He's always like that.
I was like, clear your throat. Oh, I mean, you know, when he was doing, you know, doing the deep and all that, but then again, that was, 40 years ago?
Yeah.
But basically the plot is, it's actually based on a true story. I was surprised to find that at the end of the film. It's this real fellow named Bill Bryson, who is played in the film by Robert Redford, 79-year-old Robert Redford, just had a birthday recently.
Mm-hmm.
He writes travel books, and he's relocated back to the United States after having lived in Britain for a decade or so, and taking a wife. His wife in it is played by Emma Thompson. They're settled in New Hampshire. They're playing with the grandkids and all that, and it seems like that Bill Bryson's life is taken up with being interviewed on TV. The film starts with a really awkward TV interview that's very entertaining, and he comes home from that and finds out he has to go to a funeral of another acquaintance, and he's kind of, you know, getting down about his mortality, and decides to take a stroll and realizes that he doesn't live too far from the Appalachian Trail.
Mm.
So he decides that he's going to walk the Appalachian Trail, which kept on making me think of the recent political sex scandal from a few years back. I think it was his name, Mark Sanford?
South Carolina.
Senator. Says, I'm not in Argentina. I'm walking the Appalachian Trail. Mm. But he decides he's going to do it. His wife, Emma Thompson, is dead set on him not doing it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, prints up these articles off the internet with, you know, about bear attacks and people getting snatched off, you know, into the woods and all that. But it's not
but
deterring
it's a,
him.
It's a comedy, though, right?
It is a comedy. But some of it's funny. He ends up calling a bunch of his friends. And out of the blue, this Katz character, played by Nick Nolte, calls him up. And he said, hey, I hear you're going to do this. And so they fly down to Georgia and hop on the trail. And it's all about their time on the road. And they meet up with some interesting people. Mm-hmm. Nick Offerman has a great cameo in it as the fellow that sells him his equipment. And let's see. Mary Steenburgen shows up also. So
okay.
It's from a relatively new company, Broad Green Pictures.
They had another release recently, didn't they?
Yeah. They're doing Learning to Drive, Samba. They have the upcoming 99 Homes, Breakpoint, the tennis movie comedy, Voyage of Time. So they've got a lot of good stuff coming up.
All right. So, Jim, you're going to put up a review tomorrow night at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. How many stars are you going to give?
I'm going to give it 3.5, I think.
3.5? Okay, pretty good. Something to look forward to. Another movie that opened Friday was Mistress America. And I saw it over the weekend. Michael Hafner reviewed it for WeAreMovieGeeks.com. He gave it 3.5 stars. I saw it over the weekend. I really liked it a lot. I would have probably given it 5 stars. You saw it, Jim?
Yeah, I would have probably given it upwards of 4, I think. Yeah.
Tom, you're a real big Noah Baumbach fan.
And this was great. And this was one he wrote and with his girlfriend / star, Greta Gerwig, and she's absolutely fantastic in this movie.
Now, is this their third collaboration after Frances Ha and Greenberg?
I guess.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything else that she was in that he did. But they make a great team.
Oh, yeah.
This is about a young girl. Do you remember that actress?
Lola Kirk.
I wasn't familiar with her.
She's very impressive.
Yeah. Yes. She's a freshman in college in New York City, at a college in New York City. I can't remember which one. And she meets her future stepsister. Her father is marrying, or her, I guess her mother is going to marry this other woman's father, and but they don't know each other, so they hook up in New York, and they pal around, and they become good friends. And do you remember the character's name that Greta Gerwig?
Brooke.
Was? Brooke, yeah. Yes. Brooke is in her, I guess, in her late 20s, and she's kind of a mess, but she's very endearing, and she has this just wild, big, giant personality, and is very bubbly. And
lots of ideas.
Yeah, lots of thoughts, and lots of ideas, and lots of drama. It's really a great movie. It's really funny. Everything that comes out of Greta Gerwig's mouth in this movie is very hilarious, I thought.
Yeah. You know, I was kind of sort of apprehensive after seeing the trailer for this. I was like, oh, this, she's kind of like a free spirit, and it's going to be, you know, she's going to be adorable. But she's you know, very entertaining, but a lot of times she's like, you're kind of a pill there. You're a little much to take sometimes.
Yeah, that's what it was about, though. And it's only about 85 minutes long.
Yeah.
And I guess I might have knocked off a half a star. There's one part about halfway through where they end up in Connecticut at someone's house. Mm-hmm. And that's probably 30 or 40 minutes where they're in this house, and it plays like a sort of a stage-bound farce there for about a half hour. I kept wishing they'd get back to New York, because all the stuff in New York City was fantastic.
Although the ex-boyfriend, I think, is pretty amusing.
And yeah.
He wants to still think everyone to still think he's cool, and he's running around going, "Where's my weed? Let's have some weed," and all that. And it's kind of funny.
All the characters are funny. And then there's the other character, the boy that she has a crush on, who travels with his girlfriend.
His girlfriend is something.
Yeah. She's hilarious, and she says, "Oh, don't cuckold me." And Greta Gerwig says, "Stop using old lady terms." And it's really funny.
She said, "I had a bad experience with adultery." Adultery? You're 18. Yeah. What are you using phrases like that? You're 18. You guys should be touching each other all the time.
That was a great part in the trailer.
Great lines.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's very entertaining. The New York setting, the location work is just fantastic, much like it was at Francis Ha.
Yeah.
And it was a really good film. They even have a scene set at the Macy's Day Parade at Thanksgiving. I think they did some shooting,
some guerrilla
on the
filmmaking,
sly.
Perhaps. Yeah. Yeah. But again, Greta Gerwig is so good. I think, you know, she could be nominated for this. I mean, she's silly and she's funny, but then she gets dramatic. There's a scene where she's on the phone with her dad, and he delivers some bad news to her, and she handles that scene really, really well. That's an emotional scene.
And I don't want to discount Lola Kirk either. No, this is a heck of a feature debut.
Oh, yeah. And she's really at the center of the film.
Yeah. It's mostly her story. Mm-hmm. And, she's very good. Her character, you know, changes quite a bit over the course of it. It has an interesting arc. It's well worth the effort to find this film, I think.
Definitely. I really highly, highly recommend Mistress America. All right, so those are the movies that opened the past weekend. Opening this weekend, we've got Transporter 3, which they're not showing to us. Oh. The trailer looks pretty good. I don't know. I like the first couple Transporter movies with Jason Statham. Those were fun. I don't know.
What, did he do three or four of those or something? Or
did he do? I think he just two. I think
he just did two. But
he did Crank, which were kind of the same thing.
Okay.
But if you talk to people who love the first two Transporter, especially with Jason Statham, they're like, "Oh, he's not in it," and it's kind of kind of twofold. They're like, "I kind of want to see it, but Jason Statham's not in it."
Who is this guy? Do we know who this guy is replacing
Jason
Statham?
Isn't it Ed Skarin?
That doesn't ring a bell.
Younger actor. Oh. Yeah. He's taking over the role.
He looks pretty good.
Yeah.
He's a shaved head and everything, right? Yeah. So there you go. And there's a Transporter TV show, too, although it was in there. I don't know if that's happening yet or not. So.
Oh, yeah, there's talks of that, yes.
Oh, talks of it, okay. And I thought it was already on the air, but it's not. Okay.
So is that the only thing that really opens Friday from the studio? The Transporter 3? That seems kind of bizarre.
Yeah, we have, like, Learning to Drive. Well, it's the Labor Day. Yeah. It's the Labor Day weekend. I mean, so
Yeah, I guess summer officially ended with this weekend, maybe, I guess. Mm-hmm. Huh? Yeah. So no big ones besides Transporter. Yeah. And like I say, Learning to Drive opens and Walk in the Woods opens Wednesday. Yeah. So that's kind of a major
thing. So some
thing.
Smaller films. There's a documentary opening in St. Louis this weekend called Listen to Me, Marlon. Documentary about the great actor Marlon Brando. I saw a trailer for it. It looks like they really dug up some old footage of Brando. Looks like some behind-the-scenes footage and stuff with him backstage at plays. So this should be a pretty interesting documentary to watch. I don't know a whole lot about it. But
If it's about Brando, it should be pretty. He had a pretty interesting life.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
I just hope they'll have some stuff about his roommate for a time. Wally Cox.
Yeah. Yeah. That was his best friend. In fact.
Brando.
What I read is that Wally Cox died and was cremated, and Brando had Wally Cox's ashes on his mantle and would talk to Wally Cox's ashes every night before he went to bed.
They were
very close.
Don Corleone and Underdog.
Exactly.
So that'll open this Friday.
I think in there the documentary about Steve Jobs opens Friday as well.
Is that this Friday?
I think so. Yeah, in fact, I know it is. Dane Marty will be reviewing that at WeAreMovieGeeks.com.
The Man and the Machine from Alex Gibney.
Yeah, and then there's a Steve Jobs biography starring Michael Fassbender that opens October 9th. Mm-hmm. So that might be a good companion piece. Maybe go see the documentary so you know about this guy, and then go see the biography later.
Yeah, that's
on.
Written by Danny, or directed by Danny Boyle, and written by Aaron Sorkin. So that looks, yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit more when we talk about movies that we're looking forward to later this year. Let's talk about silent movies for a minute. We never talk about silent movies here at We Are Movie Geeks, the podcast, until we do. We just talked about Safety Last a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I think the week before that, we talked about Lon Chaney and The Unknown. So actually, we do talk about silent movies here. Because we like silent movies. Mm-hmm. Doggone it.
Like all movies. Yes.
This Thursday night over Schlafly Bottle Works, we're screening a 1922 version of Dracula called Nosferatu. I think everybody's heard of Nosferatu.
Oh, yes.
This is really a pretty cool movie, though, and especially this new Kino Blu-ray, which came out a couple of years ago. It's 92 minutes, and I always grew up watching Nosferatu over and over, and it was always like 70 minutes. Did you go to the art museum last October?
I think I did, yeah. Had live music with it.
That was the first time I'd actually sat through the 92-minute version of Nosferatu. There was a scene in a cornfield that I had never seen before. A couple scenes. It's a great movie.
Lots of stuff of Redfield sort of cavorting around. And all that.
And then the tinting, that tinted print.
Oh, yes,
and that's what they'll be showing Thursday night. Max Schreck plays Count Orlok.
What a name.
Yeah. And that was his real name, too. And then Schreck is the German word for terror, coincidentally.
Yeah, and so say he was the highlighted in that film about the making of Nosferatu. Yeah. Terrific film, Shadow of the Vampire.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Willem Dafoe played him in that. It was a terrific, terrific movie if you get a chance to see that.
Yeah, well, that had the theory that Max Schreck was a vampire. That's what that movie was about. And John Malkovich played F.W. Murnau, mm-hmm. who directed Nosferatu. That's a fun movie. Dafoe was nominated for an Oscar for that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Internet Movie Database says the movie was banned in Sweden due to excessive horror, but the ban was finally lifted in 1972.
Oh, yeah.
1972?
Well, it was based on Dracula by Bram Stoker, which was written, I think, around 1889, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And when the movie came out in 1922, Stoker had died, but his widow was still alive. So she sued, and actually all prints were ordered destroyed by a judge, but I think it was just all prints in the United Kingdom were... Mrs. Stoker lives, so it wasn't. So there were plenty of prints out there.
Oh, thank heaven! I would hate to have that lost. As so many silent films are lost.
Yeah.
That would be a real tragedy.
Yeah. But. So that's this Thursday at Schlafly Bottle Works in Maplewood. I'm supposed to host it, but it depends if my daughter's tennis tournament is over in time. So if it's not, we'll just start the movie without my opening.
Oh, yeah. I remember seeing photos of Max Schreck, for a long time before seeing the film. And I was like, I thought it was, he looked like a puppet or something. Yeah. And nobody can really look like that.
Well, he acts like a puppet.
Yeah, and then you see him in the film, and he's like, he has this weird way of moving in it that's really, you know, disconcerting, to say the least.
And if you've ever seen photos of him, you know, just Max Schreck without his makeup, he looks a lot. I mean, they gave him fake teeth and fake fingernails, of course, but that nose was his. He was a pretty freaky-looking actor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's his only screen appearance, I guess.
His only screen appearance. Huh? He worked in the German film industry. Okay. That's his most famous screen appearance, and I don't know how many movies he was in that are still around. I think he lived until the mid-40s.
Okay.
Max Schreck. So go see that if you want something fun to do. But we're going to talk a bit about the summer of 2015, since it's the end of August. It's the end of summer. What were the big hits? What were the big flops? Michelle, why don't you start out? What were the biggest hits? What were the surprise hits? What do you think? Just assess the summer.
Mad Max, I think, really surprised people. I mean, going into it, I was really hesitant. I mean, even from when Warner Brothers first announced that they were making it with the same director, I think people were like, ooh. But you know what? I just, going back to it, I still really like it. I love how it turned out. I love Charlize Theron in it. I would love to see her, like Sigourney Weaver from Aliens, kind of, you know, slink in there and get a Academy Award nomination. So, you know, and the music from Junkie XL, who is now going by, his future scores will be Tom Hulkenberg. And we interviewed him. I mean, the score was great. And so I think we just all agree.
I thought it'd be like Sober XL.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was like, Junkie XL.
Rehab
okay.
XL.
So what a surprise that was.
But that's still my favorite movie of the year. I mean,
on
the surface, it's a car chase movie with lots of action. But, boy, it has so much depth and so much emotion. And technically, it just blows everything else away that came out this summer.
Doesn't it?
It really transcended the whole action genre. I mean, there was a lot of great action movies this summer, but that one was special.
Yeah.
I was going to say, my heart soared for a little bit last week when the rumors came out that George Miller was maybe going to do Man of Steel 2, but it crashed back to earth because it's not happening. So he would be something on that, for
sure. That was one of the top 10 money-making movies of the summer, but it wasn't one of the top five.
Oh, yeah, Jurassic World was.
Yeah, Jurassic World was number one, and it made $638 million domestically. Is that possible?
Yeah. Gee, I mean, $200 million just for the weekend.
Yeah.
For the opening weekend.
For the opening weekend, which, I mean, who knows what Star Wars Force Awakens is going to do, you know.
We liked Jurassic World enough. I don't think any of us were crazy about it.
Right, but just moviegoers. I mean, in San Andreas did really well.
Did 153, which is about the same as Mad Max.
Mm-hmm.
Now, San Andreas was probably my second favorite, you know, summer blockbuster. But again, you know, compared to Mad Max, it was kind of dumb cinema, but it was a lot of fun. And Dwayne Johnson was great. And the special effects were sort of mind boggling and
many people were killed.
That's right.
So we love that. That makes it fun.
But at least you didn't have any little girls watching their mothers get raped or anything like that.
Being tossed across buildings.
Women films did really well. Spy from Melissa McCarthy did really well. Trainwreck with Amy Schumer.
Yeah, Trainwreck was not in the top 10 of this summer, but Spy was. Pitch Perfect 2
mm-hmm.
was number
another,
five.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, yeah. Pitch Perfect.
$183 million.
Strong sequel. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. And then we just heard last week that about Amy's possible next film with might be with Jennifer Lawrence, which gives me reason to keep on living. I tell you.
So
I look forward to that.
Number two of the summer was Avengers with $457 million.
Yes.
Well, that one sort of dropped from my memory. I didn't really care for Avengers too much. It's not a movie I've really given much thought to. But you liked it, Jim.
Yeah, yeah. There's some elements in it that are very entertaining. I don't think it's quite as good as the first installment, but it's setting up things, some plots for some interesting new films, and you know there's nice sequences in it, like I say, you know.
So what were the big flops of the summer, Michelle? I mean, there was three off the top of my head that were pretty major.
Terminator Genesis.
Well, no, Terminator Genesis, as we said earlier, it cleaned up internationally.
Right, but I mean, domestically, I think it did. It was a little softer than what they thought.
I think, you know, it's that script is boy, it should have gone through the process a couple more times. It was just a mess, I think, by the end of it.
Man from Uncle didn't do so well.
No, Man from Uncle was one of the big bombs I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We were mentioning that Armie Hammer had a birthday last weekend. I wish him to be in a film that turns a profit soon, because you know, after this and The Lone Ranger, he's got to get in something. Either that or it's an NCIS spinoff for him, maybe. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hang in there, buddy. You were great in J. Edgar. You were great in Social Network. So we want to see it in some better films.
Fantastic Four.
Oh,
a big flop of the summer.
Yeah,
that's dropped out. That wasn't even the top 12. Was this just week? Was this week three or?
Three or four. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it week came three, out the first
it's
of August.
Dropped out of the top 12. A Marvel movie. I wonder if any Marvel movie has dropped out of the top 10.
Not
quicker than
a Marvel
Fantastic.
Studios film.
Well, you know what I'm saying. A Marvel property.
Yeah, it's 20th Century Fox. They don't know what they're doing with that property. Give
well, the biggest back. The biggest flop of the year financially had to have been Tomorrowland.
That probably crossed the $100 million mark just barely, I guess, or
but it cost a heck of a lot more than that.
From the trailer, it had such promise, and you know, Brad Bird directed it, and
well, the trailer focused on the good stuff.
Yeah,
in the
exactly.
Movie. It didn't show you
the focus groups.
Yeah, it didn't show you all the stuff of them on the road forever. I was like, I want it set in Tomorrowland with this retro futuristic stuff and people on jetpacks and all that, and it's not that.
And I mean, Brad Bird has done a Mission Impossible movie, and you know, he's proven he can do. And they're re-releasing his Iron Man
Iron Giant.
They're re-releasing that, which I can't wait to see back in the theater.
Yeah,
seriously.
Yeah, but he's still got a great career. I think this is not gonna be a huge setback for him or George Clooney.
Or George Clooney, right.
But for the Disney execs, they're like, it's a good thing we bought Lucasfilm and Marvel, I think.
So is Mad Max all our favorite movie of the year so far? It's still mine.
I mean, without having seen a lot of the fall stuff right now, definitely.
Yeah.
So that was the best film of the summer, according to We Are Movie Geeks. So a lot of good movies over the summer, a lot of bad movies as well. But there are still 4 months left in the year, and we've kind of got a list of movies that are coming out. You know, the Oscar contenders and the fall dumps and things like that. So let's take a look at some of the movies coming up. What are you guys looking for? What are you looking forward to, Michelle, the rest of 2015?
Right off the bat, The Visit, September 11th, M. Night Shyamalan.
We're seeing that, I think, a week.
He financed that movie, too. So
I guess his last movie lost so much money he had to.
Although his TV show, Wayward Pines, this summer was a big hit. So. Okay. I'm glad to see him back in this like little small horror movie.
We'll be reviewing that here in a week or two, and then we'll probably also talk about M. Night and his career. And I know Michelle's a big fan. Pawn Sacrifice, we're seeing tomorrow. That's about Bobby Fischer.
Yeah, yes. Bobby Fischer. What's the Russian's name?
Boris Yeltsin. Boris Yeltsin.
Kapinski.
Boris Bad Enough. He had one of those evil Russian guys.
By Ed Zwick, who I'm a big fan of.
Oh,
director.
Yeah. He hasn't directed a movie in a while.
No. Nope.
Glory and Courage Under Fire. And
Last Samurai.
A lot of good films. So good for him. I didn't realize he had directed that. He's more of an action guy. This seems sort of intimate for him. Black Mass. It stars Johnny Depp as Whitey Bulger. That looks really good.
Yeah, that is really fantastic.
It's got a great cast. Benedict Cumberbatch is in there.
Although that weekend, September 18th weekend, is pretty full with Sicario, About Ray, Maze Runner sequel, Cooties. September 18th is going to have a lot.
Cooties looks pretty funny.
Cooties has been a festival favorite,
I will say. It's about a school full of elementary school students who become bloodthirsty zombies or something.
Yep.
So Rainn Wilson and Elijah Wood team up to take them on.
Well, that could be fun.
The trailer's really funny. Sicario is Denis Villeneuve's new film. He did Prisoners and Enemies last year, the year before, which were both really good films.
Yeah, that looks really interesting. It's actually written by an actor, I believe. It's on the Sons of Anarchy TV show.
Yes.
And that's kind of a...
Emily Blunt's
the main star, along with Benicio Del Toro.
Okay, that's right. I saw a trailer for that. That looked pretty good.
Yeah.
That's from Lionsgate. Lionsgate also are... The next film about Ray is from the Weinstein Company.
Yeah.
It's the first of... There's quite a few transgender films coming out, so that's kind of the first one.
You got the Danish girl coming out with Freddie Redmayne.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what that's about. I think that's based on a true story.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw a trailer last night for a French film called The New Girlfriend, or The Other Girlfriend, or something.
Uh-huh.
It looks to be in that same venue there.
Freeheld.
And then you've got Stonewall, open September 25th.
Mm-hmm. Saw that trailer last night.
About a gay riot.
In the 1970s.
Yeah.
True story.
And that stars Jeremy Irvine, who was in War Horse.
Roland Emmerich directed that one, too.
I couldn't believe that when I saw his name associated with that. Does not seem like a Roland Emmerich movie. I wonder what. I wonder why he's tackled that project, but it looks pretty good.
He's also a gay man, and so that was kind of a passion project for him.
Hope it's good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I hope all these movies are good. Everest looks really good.
Yeah.
Got Jake Gyllenhaal and...
I sent somebody to the press junket last week, so they have seen Everest, and they said it is 2 hours holding onto your chair.
Oh, yeah.
Definite to see in IMAX 3D that it's going to be at the end of September to definitely see it.
Oh, okay. That'd be a good double feature with No Escape.
Yeah.
Well, No Escape will be out of the theaters by then.
Yeah.
Hotel Transylvania. Oh, goody. I guess Adam Sandler's back for that. Actually, I kind of liked Hotel Transylvania. Part one. This is...
Who's playing the comedian playing his father? The Count Vlad. Gosh. Brooks. Mel Brooks.
Oh, Mel Brooks is
he's voicing that.
Oh, okay.
Is that right? We like Mel Brooks. The Intern, that's Robert De Niro. I've seen that trailer too many times.
Is it Nancy Myers?
It's been a while.
I kind of got the feeling of what that one's about just by watching the trailer. The Walk. That's about the tightrope walker.
That looks great.
That's in 3D.
That's Robert Zemeckis.
Movie about a tightrope walker. That's pretty brilliant to make that one.
The guy that walked across the Twin Towers. That's great.
Jim and I saw that trailer with Ant-Man in 3D IMAX, I think it was. Oh my gosh.
Legend opens October 2nd. That's Tom Hardy, and he plays the Craze brothers. Made a movie in the 90s. He's called the Craze.
Yeah, I remember that. With one of the guys. The guy that married Gwen Stefani there. What's the
Kemp? It started the Kemp brothers.
Oh, the Kemp brothers. Yeah.
I can't remember their first names, but they came from the music industry. They were in a group called
not Spandau Ballet.
Yes.
Spandau Ballet.
Yeah, that's it.
How did I pull that out?
I'm
not a music guy.
But I remember seeing that at the theater, and it was a pretty
good.
True story.
Fascinating, and two times the Tom Hardy.
Hardy's playing both of the Krays.
Set in the early 60s, I guess, eh? Yeah.
Oh, Freeheld. That's another gay-themed drama.
That's what Julianne Moore?
Julianne Moore and Elizabeth Page.
Ellen Page.
And they play partners, and I think Julianne Moore's dying, so they try to get Ellen Page to get her pension. You know, these dramas about pensions are always
pretty exciting. And that documentary, the true story, the documentary won the Oscar the year it came out. It's based on that story.
Yeah.
But my most anticipated film, of the fall, The Martian.
Yeah.
I cannot...
Well, they're showing that at Fantastic Fest, so Michael will probably be the first one in our group to see that.
And they're showing that at Toronto coming up.
Steve Jobs' biography, we talked about that. Pan.
Yeah.
Who directed Pan, do we know?
Oh, gosh.
Right, Joe Wright.
Oh, Joe Wright, that's right.
That was Warner Brothers. They pushed that out of the summer because the special effects were not done.
It's a Peter Pan story.
Hugh Jackman. Not as Captain Hook, though.
Blackbeard,
yes. Oh, yeah. Yes, Captain Hook. And this is actually a buddy of Peter Pan. So
okay. Bridge of Spies is Spielberg's movie about the Gary Francis power incident, and Tom Hanks is in it, so that'll be pretty good.
And John Williams is not doing the music.
Oh, okay.
Right. Oh,
Crimson Peak is a haunted house thriller that opens October 16th from director Guillermo del Toro. Charles Hummel and Jessica Chastain.
Yes.
I'm sure it'll be pretty good.
I hope so. Yeah.
Room I saw a trailer for the other night. It looks to be sort of a kidnap drama.
Mm-hmm. Mother and daughter.
Yeah, based on Burnt stars Bradley Cooper and Alicia Vikander again. Mm-hmm. She's in a couple of movies coming up.
The Truth movie, October 16th, is the Robert Redford, Cate Blanchett, based on Dan Rather.
Debacle.
How are they going to make Rather look good without totally rewriting history? That'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
The Last Witch Hunter stars Vin Diesel, so that's going to be
fun.
Yeah.
Yes.
Rock the Casbah with Bill Murray and Bruce Willis.
They just released a new trailer. That looks like Bill Murray showed up to promote Rock the Casbah at Comic-Con in July. First time ever. He looked like he was having a great time.
Paranormal Activity Suffragette stars Meryl Streep and who else?
Carrie Mulligan.
Yeah,
it could be interesting. There's an interesting bit of history there. Yeah. The 1920s, 19-teens.
From Focus Features.
Yeah.
And of course, November 6th, probably the movie besides Hateful Eight that I'm most looking forward to is the new 007 Spectre. Monica Bellucci plays the Bond girl, and at age 50, she's the oldest Bond girl.
Yeah, but Lea Seydoux from Blue is the Warmest Color is another Bond girl in it.
Right. And Christoph Waltz is the villain. Sam Mendes, who directed the last one, is back as director.
Mm-hmm. Dave Bautista from Guardians of the Galaxy. Is Drax the Destroyer is the main henchman in this one, I believe. Yes.
Okay. I'm really... So.
That's another full weekend. I mean, Peanuts movie, the Trumbo movies. Yeah.
Carol is another gay-themed film.
With Rooney Mara and
Cate Blanchett. And that's directed by Todd Haynes.
Yeah. That got rave reviews out of the Cannes Film Festival. Oh, wow.
Yeah, in fact, didn't Rooney win Best Actress? Or?
Yeah, she shared it.
Well, she shared it. Okay,
yeah, she had to share it with another actress.
Moving along, the new Hunger Games. The Danish Girl, I think we mentioned, that's Freddie Raybane. And Alicia Vikander is in that one as well.
Mm-hmm.
I saw The Light is a Hank Williams story with Tom Huddleston as Hank Williams. He looks exactly like
him.
There's a lot of good stuff coming out at Thanksgiving. Disney's putting out The Good Dinosaur. Saw a nice family-friendly movie where dinosaurs never left the earth, and we just Creed is the Rocky-ish movie.
Rocky sequel,
And Victor Frankenstein,
which
looks really funny.
Except it was written by the guy who wrote American Ultra, which makes me look a little less excited about that one. That'll take us up to December. Heart of the Seas, Ron Howard's new movie about whalers.
Yeah, with Thor.
Chris Hemsworth.
And a Krampus movie.
Yeah, that's right. We'll see how the Krampus movie is. The Revenant. Okay, then that takes us up to Christmas Day. Well, Star Wars, of course. The Force Awakens opens December 18th, so that's a week before Christmas. That'll be a big deal. The Revenant stars Leo DiCaprio versus bears. None The Hateful Eight, which I think is the movie we're all looking most forward to.
Mm-hmm.
Joy stars Jennifer Lawrence about a woman who sells stuff on TV, a true story. Point Break. I think they must have pushed Point Break back because I've been seeing that trailer for months and months.
That's the remake.
Yeah. No, then Daddy's Home stars Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg.
Mm-hmm.
It looks pretty funny.
I should mention Joy is also directed by David O.
That's
Russell.
Right.
That's the main selling point for me on it.
Yeah. And with his usual, Jennifer Lawrence, Bradley Cooper.
Company.
And they're also, Universal just said, what the heck? We're going to put in the Sisters movie with Tina Fey just on the same weekend that Star Wars opens.
Oh, yes. Well, something for the...
And they've been joking about it. That's become the big joke.
Yeah, Tina says, we're going to crush that little Star Wars.
Exactly.
Concussion stars Will Smith as a doctor who studies concussions. That sounds exciting.
Right.
So lots of stuff to look forward to the rest of the year. And we'll be reviewing all these movies. And you can, of course, go to our website, wearemoviegeeks.com.
And having screening and screening passes and screening contests.
That's right. 2015 is not over by a long shot. Maybe there'll be something better than Mad Max. I doubt it, but you never know.
The kids of Elm Street don't know it yet, but something is coming to get them.
There's something out there, isn't there?
Wes Craven died yesterday. I didn't see that coming. He's one of my favorite horror directors, really one of the most influential and important horror directors of the 70s and 80s. He was 76 years old. His first film, which I think is his best film, was The Last House on the Left.
It rests on 13 acres of earth over the very center of hell. Here is the first motion picture to offer to the daring a look into the final maddening space between life and death.
That's one of the most terrifying movies. I saw that over and over and over at the drive-in back in the late 70s. I watched it last night. It really holds up well. That, of course, starred David Hess and Fred Lincoln and some people, and they kidnapped these two girls and torture them and kill them, and then they stumble upon one of their parents' homes and they get their comeuppance.
As I recall, Roger Ebert pointed out it's sort of a remake of The Virgin Spring.
That's right, it is.
The Ingmar Bergman film. But it's got one of the most famous ad lines ever. It says, just keep telling yourself it's only a movie.
It's only a
movie. To avoid fainting, keep repeating.
It's only a movie. Only a movie.
But Deadly Blessing's a really good horror film about Mennonites with Ernest Borgnine and
Sharon Stone.
Yeah.
Jeff East, young
that's
Clark
right,
Kent.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And Hills Have Eyes. That's...
Oh, I love the Hills.
They wanted to see something different, but something different saw them first. The Hills Have Eyes.
That's an influential horror film, that's for certain.
No doubt.
There's been like two or three remakes of it, or reboots or whatever.
Yeah, they remade it, and then they made a sequel to the remake. Wes Craven made a sequel, actually in 84, to The Hills Have Eyes. Michael Berryman was the sort of bald, ugly guy.
Uh-huh.
I've met him a few times. He had some sort of condition where he couldn't grow skin or fingernails, and he ended up sort of odd looking, but it worked for him, and he ended up having a career as a horror villain in a lot of films. Actually pops up in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in Doc Savage, the Man of Bronze.
That's right. Deadly Friend, that starred Christy Swanson as a teenage girl who had superpowers. I don't remember that one. Serpent and the Rainbow was a scary movie. That had Bill Pullman,
yeah.
And he traveled out to Haiti, and he got mixed up with these voodoo guys, and he was buried alive.
Yeah, the ending is just really creepy.
Yeah.
It's kind of, somewhat inspired by a real guy, I guess, right?
Right.
Shocker was made in 89. But his biggest hit was, and his most influential hit was Nightmare on Elm Street in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
Starred Robert Englund, of course, as Freddy Krueger, and Johnny Depp. That was Johnny Depp's first film.
Yeah.
Heather Langenkamp?
Langenkamp, and John Saxon, and Ronnie Blakely. It had a great cast, but it was a very scary movie.
Yeah, one of those game-changing horror films.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, there was a big horror renaissance, I guess, in the late 70s, and it was just kind of cooling down, I guess, in 84,
yeah.
And then, you know, Wes brings it back with a vengeance.
Bond, half a dozen or more sequels, all of varying quality. I kind of like Part 3, but Wes Craven did not direct any of the follow-ups, I think.
Right.
He probably made a lot of money off of them.
Dream Warriors is number three.
Yeah,
right?
That's really good. That's Patricia Arquette was in that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Shocker. People Under the Stairs. Vampire in Brooklyn starred Eddie Murphy.
Yep.
Nobody liked that one. In fact, he was kind of struggling there for a few years, I guess. But then he did Scream in 1996, and that was a huge, huge hit.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that opening sequence just sets the tone.
What's that noise?
Popcorn.
You're making popcorn?
Uh-huh.
I only eat popcorn at the movies.
Well, I'm getting ready to watch a video.
Really? What?
Oh, just some scary movie.
You like scary movies?
Uh-huh.
What's your favorite scary movie?
I don't know.
You have to have a favorite. What comes to mind?
Halloween.
Then he did the sequel, Scream 2, and then he tried to go mainstream in 1999. He directed Music of the Heart, starring Meryl Streep in one of her Oscar-nominated performances.
Mm-hmm. She's like a violin coach or something?
I never saw Music in the Heart.
It's a nice movie, but when I ever first found out it was Wes Craven, it is. It's a nice little fork off the road from his usual, you know, his horror.
And he did Scream 3. He did Cursed. That had Christina Ricci. That was a werewolf movie.
I like that one.
I like that movie, too.
Yeah.
Jesse Eisenberg's in that, too.
Robert Loggia is also in that?
I think you might be thinking of Innocent Blood, vampire film.
That was John Landis,
Red
Eye. That had Cillian Murphy and...
Rachel McAdams, Brian Cox.
Yeah, that's a pretty good movie.
Cillian Murphy, 2 days before the wedding, 2 days before his wedding in England, flies to L.A. to meet with Wes Craven to say, I need to do this movie.
Okay.
Wes Craven says, you've got it just based on your eyes. If you watch Cillian Murphy, he's got these light... And the movie...
The movie's called Red Eye.
Yeah. The movie was originally written for and was supposed to be with Sean Penn and Robin Wright.
Oh, yeah.
But he was like, I need to go younger. movie's going to skew a little younger, so...
Yeah. That was a good movie. His last horror movie was called My Soul to Take.
Creepy.
It was creepy. I remember seeing that. And he had brain cancer, apparently, and passed away yesterday. So we are Movie Geeks. Want to pay tribute to Wes Craven. Rest in peace, Wes Craven. Anybody else want to say anything about Wes Craven?
I have a soft spot for Swamp Thing.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Oh, yeah.
I do, too. I really do.
That was kind of his bid to go for a younger crowd, for the kid crowd.
Yeah. It's a little heavy-handed. It's a little sometimes too serious, but all in all, I just...
It's kind of nice, goofy fun.
Yeah,
and,
I do.
Adrienne Barbeau is fun in it. And,
she is,
You know, and it's like I say, it's pretty... It doesn't camp it up too much. It's
a
pretty close adaptation of the comic book.
And Louis Jordan is in it.
That's right, as our Kane.
Yes.
All right, so rest in peace, Wes Craven. We'll be back Next week, we'll review Listen to Me, Marlin. I'm sure one of us will have seen Transporter 3 by then, so we can offer our opinion on that. I'm sure there'll be lots of other movie things to talk about, but for now, we're going to have to end this week's show. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And be sure to listen again next week at the We Are Movie Geeks podcast.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta-ta-ta.
Black leather, black leather. Oh, nice, Dave. Hello, Don.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling. Black leather, rock.